Hey, Jamie, I've got a question for you.
What do you want, Tom?
Who's on the podcast this coming Friday? Is it someone big?
Boy.
Is it a big one? Shall I bother listening this week?
Yeah. If I was going to say take.
And I would say off.
No.
Your trousers.
No, no. Take.
Me out.
No. Take.
Paddy McGuinness.
No. Take.
Take on me.
Take that.
Wow.
Have a little patience.
But hang on, presumably you haven't got all three of them, have you? Presumably you've just got one of them.
Buddy, we have all three of them on the podcast. They've released a new album. It's coming out. They're going on tour. They talk about the ups, the downs, the lefts, the rights, on everything that happened in Take That.
The ins, the outs.
And they reveal it all this Friday.
Exclusively.
On Private Parts.
That's a big one. I'm going to listen to that.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
It's Mental Health Awareness Week, and the theme this year is body image. As well as being a driving force behind our I Am Whole campaign, YMCA also run the Be Real campaign. The Be Real campaign aims to change attitudes to body image and build a body confident nation. So for Mental Health Awareness Week, we thought we'd bring these amazing YMCA campaigns together for two special episodes of the Whole Truth podcast. Here is the first one with Be Real ambassador Michelle Ellman. Enjoy! Okay, so welcome to the Whole Truth podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, well, I'm going to introduce you in a sec.
Oh, sorry. Wait,
I've got to do a little bit
start
of
again.
Before.
Okay.
No, we're not going to start again. We're going to keep this in because it has like a natural feel.
Okay.
And I believe the audiences want that.
Yeah.
Real time stuff.
Yeah.
The Whole Truth podcast is a podcast kind of, around people's relationship with their mental health and then pretty much open to anything. You know, the idea is just about honesty and openness. And however, I'll be talking to a couple of people for a podcast that we're going to be putting out during Mental Health Awareness Week in 2019, which is Monday the 13th to Sunday the 19th of May. And the theme is body image, how we think and feel about our bodies. There's my own relationship with my body I've in private discussed, but considering if anything, I need to be more private generally.
Yeah.
It's like body image is one thing I haven't necessarily been so open about. So to see that the Be Real campaign is Mental Health Awareness Week, that is the theme. It makes me happy because I think as well as I'd say some clear, as well as the forefront of the issues or forefront of discussion surrounding body image, body confidence, body positivity, I think there's a lot of conversation to be had around particular demographics or parts of society that I think suppress a lot of those feelings. But we will be encouraging people to make their social media channels body positive and promote certain accounts and influencers, I think like yourself. and I will introduce you. we're going to look for people to be deemed Be Real approved. And we'll be promoting a Be Real toolkit for schools. And we're going to be taking a pledge, I think, a Be Real campaign pledge.
Yeah.
I think. Not necessarily on this podcast. I'm pretty sure you've already taken it. but I would like to introduce to you Michelle Ellman.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm very good. Very glad to be here.
You are a body confidence coach. You have a incredible online following. Your handle is Scarred Not Scared. I just remembered I should always introduce people's social media handles, which I don't always do. But I'm a work in progress. No, I know, but in the previous interviews, I realised I don't like. Anyway.
No, but people tend to know my username and don't tend to know my name.
Oh, they just shout Scarred Not Scared at you.
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic.
It's my new name.
You have your own podcast called Let Me Talk.
Yeah.
And your author, you're Amazon number one bestseller.
In my category, to be clear.
Which is?
Self-help and I think it's like autobiography.
I think that's pretty much the biggest category for?
Or it's like or eating disorders. There are so there.
I mean, listen, it says it here: Amazon number one bestseller. I appreciate your modesty, but we're just going to go with that.
Okay.
So yeah, you have the social media campaign "Scarred Not Scared," which already is an incredibly. And then it just hits me straight away. You know what I mean? I think you didn't put any punches on the title, and your vocal on diversity in regards to brands, fashion, and you speak out and represent.
Yeah, I've been speaking out quite a lot about lack of Asian representation in terms of fashion and plus size markets at the moment.
Cause right.
People seem to think plus size Asians don't exist.
What brought you into being? What
doing
brought you into the
of
world
this.
Of what? Huh?
What doing all of this?
Yeah. Well, but what yeah. you know? What drew you to? And I mean, the Be Real campaign eventually, but your own campaign. Yeah, like it's an incredible place to be in. Wanting to spread your knowledge and encourage others to feel good.
Yeah.
Like what is?
So it started with the fact that I've had 15 surgeries, so hence the name Scarred Not Scared. I have a lot of surgery scars from 15 surgeries from a brain tumour, a punctured intestine, an obstructed bowel, a cyst in my brain, and I live with a condition called hydrocephalus.
Right.
So I had these surgery scars, and much like what you were saying about staying silent around body image issues, I think that's like what we all do, because you're taught, like, if you're embarrassed about something, why would you talk about it? So I just stayed silent around my surgery scars, and because they're covered when I'm fully dressed, I didn't need to talk about them. And so I just pretended like they didn't exist and had the illusion that if I didn't talk about them, they didn't affect my life until I want to start dating, being really honest.
Yeah.
And then had to...
That's often where a lot of us have to meet.
Because also then you're like, well, I have to have this conversation that I've never had with any of my friends, but now I'm supposedly meant to have it with a guy
context.
Who I care, like... I've never cared about someone's opinion more than I've cared about this guy's.
Yeah.
But I've never even had this conversation, not just about the scars, but about the surgeries. And so I started Googling for it, and it was actually the absence of articles that would come up. And I was like, I can't be the only one with surgery scars. But
no.
There was no conversation about it online. And then it just became more and more ironic as I got older, because I got trained as a life coach. And then chose to specialise in body confidence and work with body confidence clients. And this body positivity movement was growing and growing, talking about everybody is beautiful. But no matter where I looked, whether it was social media or literally Google, there was still no body that looked like mine. And scars was not part of the conversation, which is why I launched Scar Not Scared, was because I was like, this movement can't keep growing without this massive area and intersection around scars, surgery, illness, disability that isn't existing. So I started talking about that and how I was body shamed at like 10 years old around wearing a bikini for the first time. And
so how old were you when you had these surgeries, sorry?
So I started having them when I was 1 year old. So,
what are the reasons for... Is it something you were born, things you were born with?
Just bad luck,
no
to
way.
Be honest. Like, I think because you hear the list and you're a bit like, they must all be connected somehow, but they're not really.
What do you mean? So there were actually events? It's not like there were events that caused you to have the surgeries?
No, so like the brain tumour was random. The punctured intestine was an accident from one of my other surgeries. The obstructed bowels does happen when you've had previous abdominal surgery.
So it's like a domino thing.
Yeah, cyst in my brain, happened to be born with it. Brain tumour, same, I happened to be born with it. Condition called hydrocephalus was kind of a misdiagnosis, but also... where the treatment for it is to implant a plastic tube in your body and also a metal plate in your brain. But they'd already done that once I'd already... when they thought they'd misdiagnosed me, at which point my body had already got used to it. So I have all those things.
Oh, mate. You're a legend.
Well, I have a unique story.
Yeah, yes. But you're just out here just like having... from the age of one.
Yeah.
And you're just out here just like... being a life coach.
Yeah.
You're a legend.
Well, I mean, I don't think I was coaching quite at one yet.
No, but I mean, big up. Like,
Thank you. That's
quite an ordeal to have to experience at a young age. That's a lot of...
You grow up a lot quicker, yeah.
Well, you have to.
Yeah, no choice. So,
and it must have shaped your relationship with trauma and...
100%. And I think it sounds ridiculous when I say this because I'm only 25 years old. I'm not old, but... medicine has progressed quite a lot in 25 years, and mental health has progressed a lot in terms of the fact that I was in hospital when I was 11 years old and I was sent a psychologist once, and it was only after my 13th surgery I got sent a psychologist.
They didn't think you were going to be affected by that?
No, I went into hospital when I was 7, I went into hospital when I was 1, when I was 2, no one thought that
it was just like, let's get it done.
And I mean, same with rehabilitation, no one thought to actually properly rehab, like learn how to walk properly again. They just gave me the IV drip and was like, go for a walk.
Go for a walk. Do you agree with that?
No. And so what ended up happening was when I was 21, I got PTSD. And I truly believe that only happened because I didn't get a chance to feel angry and sad. And
it's trapped in you.
Yeah, 100%. And so it was like when I got PTSD, when I got diagnosed, it was literally just like crying every day for 3 months. It was almost like every emotion I bottled up, and I was triggered. And I was triggered in the middle of a psychology, because I did a degree in psychology to become what I wanted to be, was a psychologist originally. But it was sitting in the middle of a lecture, they're talking about the effect on physical health, on mental health. They said the sentence, and what you'll always find is that patients will always go, why me? And they said this words, why me? And I used to say that in hospital, and it was just like,
even hearing that makes me
it was like a Rolodex of like every single memory I'd repressed just, and like just flashed before my eyes. And I'm like, the worst part was I was trapped in the middle of a bench and couldn't get out, so I was sat there like tears crying, like going down my face, and the lecturer could see me, but my friends were next to me, and I didn't want to like turned so that they could see I was crying, so the lecturer just like was staring at me, and I'm like, this is so ironic.
Oh, so your hair was like blocking you on either side, but it was the only person who could see you was the lecturer.
Yeah, it was the lecturer.
Did they understand?
Yeah, and also they had prefaced the whole lecture series with, this is a really
difficult,
sensitive topic, and if you feel like you need to leave at any point, that sounds great. But logistically, when you've got your friends sitting either side of you, and I just remember my friend sent me a text off that lecture being like, where'd you disappear to? Like, I was trying to find you after. I was like, yeah, I might have like literally whisked myself out of that lecture hall.
And that
quickly
was, and that continued on.
And then I started crying in that lecture and did not stop for 3 months. I genuinely thought my eyeballs were going to break at some point, and that you could like die of dehydration by crying, because I would wake up, cry till I like went to sleep. And it was only when like I started getting flashbacks, hallucinations, and it was only when I started getting auditory hallucinations, which actually wasn't an auditory hallucination. It was one of my friends.
Sorry, you mean like voices?
Well, so this is a ridiculous story, but it's true and it's in my book. But basically my friend had knocked on my door, but I hadn't heard the knock. So he was standing outside my door going, Michelle, Michelle. And because I'd been having visual hallucinations, I thought that was a voice. So I started freaking out even more, at which point obviously then I discovered it was actually a real person, opened the door and just like started yelling at him, being like, you don't turn up to someone's house without knocking. And he was like, whoa, this is not you. And like in my friendship group, I was known as a girl who's always like smiling and laughing, and I laugh a lot and I smile a lot. And this guy in particular had said to me literally like 2 weeks before this crying had happened, you laugh more in a day than I laugh in a month. And that's all I had in my head whilst I was crying.
And
was
you felt
that,
like guilty or something.
Yeah, that I should go back to that person.
Oh, God, I've had that. It's the worst.
And also that you're not, like, no one wants that friend. Like, they were my friend because I used to laugh so much.
I get that.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a male thing.
No,
just a human thing.
I think it's a human thing.
Really? So you didn't have, I mean, what were your friendship circle like at the time? Was it? Did you have like a core group that you felt totally comfortable with, or did you?
Yeah, my uni friendship group was the first time I felt like I belonged in a place and didn't have to fit
first time.
In. Yeah, and I think that's what I really needed to start. University was the first time I started talking about my surgeries and scars, and I think I needed that friendship group where I felt really safe in that group. But my role, I guess, in the group was
the funny one,
the drunk one, the one who like got up on a table, started dancing on a night out. Like that was my.
And you were scared of losing that.
Yeah, and I was the life. Like I was always like put as the life of the party. Michelle, like if Michelle's on the night out, it's going
to
be a fun night out.
Did you ever say this? Have you ever had this conversation with them?
I have, and they've all read my book since. And so what had happened day was that I started yelling at him, and then he was like, whoa, what's happening? So like we sat down and the two of us just like, I told him everything that was happening, and he was the one who went, you need to go to therapy and you need help and it's okay to ask for that. And he's like, because I said to him in that moment when I was like yelling at him, you told me that like I laugh more than a day in a day than you laugh in a month, and I don't want to lose that. And he was like, anyone who's friends with you just because of that, you don't deserve. Like, if they can't stick around whilst you're crying, then they're not a friend in the first place. And that sentence was like the permission I needed to just like reach out. But, like, thank God I had good friends, because what would have happened?
Michelle, I don't think I can handle this.
It's emotional. So,
it's too deep. Real. Too it's deep. So real.
Yeah.
Wow, yeah.
What were your experiences then? So you said you were, like, confined. No, this is not one way. It's two way.
All right, yeah. Actually, the thing that's hitting me with the friendship thing, that's not necessarily connected to body image. That was just me going through a really bad breakup.
Yeah.
And, prior to that, I just like, I don't know, I had this kind of place with my mates as I just rationalized everything. And I was like, you know, I was going to the gym a lot. My body was in great shape. I was like, I was achieving a lot, I suppose, in an objective sense.
Yeah.
You know, I was kind of like getting
perceived
jobs.
Perceived success, and, that's what
yeah,
I call it.
Yeah, I was like earning money and like things were coming in. And I was kind of like free in terms of my in terms of love. I was, you know, I was very much like I was growing into my to what I considered to be attractive. I thought I had quite a high, good opinion of how I was confident. I'd say faux confidence, but of confidence all the same. And I met this girl. I mean, that's literally a whole other podcast, but I totally fucked up, and I hurt her a lot. And in doing so, hurt myself. And yeah, went into this breakup, and it just like, when I say it, I broke, it was like, you know, this is why I've kind of gone into the world of masculinity as well, or talking about it conceptually. But I broke, man. And suddenly these, you know, these boys around me who had seen me as like the guy who they'd go to if they broke up with a girl, you know, or like they'd say something to me and I'd be like, no, this, boom, boom, you know, very like assertive. And suddenly I'm just like a baby. Like I was struggling to not drown.
But you know? I think also the masculinity thing comes in, because if you look at the media and how media presents breakups, the woman's allowed to go cry and eat Ben and Jerry's. The man goes out and sleeps with a ton of women.
Right, so I was stopping. So I also made the conscious choice in this breakup to not go to my previous vices, which would have been drugs and, I suppose like some kind of like release sexually, but... Yeah, and I ended up with like a real fear afterwards that I had ruptured all of those close relationships, because who wants to hang out with that guy?
Yeah.
You know, which is sad. But so that's why what you're saying resonated with me so much, because I'm only now, a year and a half later, from finding a harmony within myself, more open to people's ups and downs. And also you have to be open, you know, what did someone say to me? Be the friend that you want.
Yeah.
You know?
But it's true, because also now that you've had some time from it, and since that PTSD thing was, 5 years ago?
Really?
You do realise that the people you lost in that process, like, were the people who only wanted the fun, Michelle, but didn't want the nuanced, like complex human. Loss. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's also sometimes confronting for those people.
Yeah.
And it always, man, I've got a few mates who... I remember I've gone through so many phases growing up where I've in my head, I've tried to rationalise, like, disowning them almost. Because I'm just like, because I've known them for so long. And then, literally, arrogance, you know, of just like, oh, no, I need to, because I didn't go to uni, so I didn't get, like, a new batch. Every single time I go through, like, some kind of trauma, they're always there. And they're always, like, and in their same teenage, like, where have you been, knob? You know what I mean? Like, where have you been? Oh, you know what I mean? Like,
this Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
And I love that. Yeah, in terms of body image, the reason I feel passionately about it is because I went through this tough phase where I had like I'd say four months of quite severe body dysmorphia, but I never really spoke about it for a few reasons. One, because I do think in terms of male body image, yeah, we're only just starting to really open up that conversation, and there's also starting to be some really negative. I saw some adverts the other day, you know, for like men putting six packs on their body and stuff, yeah, online. It's awful. So you'd never see that before. In fact, the hypocrisy used to be that men could be look like anything,
yeah,
and women had the pressure, you know. But I was actually coming out of like, I'd say, I don't want to say like it was, I say addiction, but it wasn't like a disease, yeah, addiction thing. It was like I was just abusing myself, yeah, for a long time. And I was like, right, I'm done. Health is how I'm going to get out of it. So I put myself on these meals, right? You know, yeah, it's like, and I go to the gym like four times a week. I lose the weight like that. I start gaining muscle. I'm cycling like 30, 40 miles a week.
Yeah.
And playing football twice a week. I'm just like constantly active.
Yeah.
And I'm eating four meals a day, you know?
Yeah.
Sometimes a bit on top, but it didn't matter because I'm training. Yeah. In the gym, everyone's like, oh, Jordan's like, you know, I was building muscle so fast.
Yeah.
So the guys who loved the gym, they were going, oh my God, like, you know, this is amazing. It was, yeah, like a 3 month change in me from going from a bit like beery and like what one of my friends called doughy.
Yeah.
To like this kind of like fit. I mean, by societal standards or by even just by like boring mathematical,
yeah,
you know, muscle to fat ratio, I was seemingly in shape.
Yeah.
And then in 1 week, I tore a ligament in my ankle and I displaced a tendon in my arm and couldn't work out, couldn't play football, couldn't cycle. But I had this, I stretched my stomach.
Yeah.
So I was eating four meals a day. And I was always hungry, you know? I was always hungry. Yeah. And I ate and ate. And I, you know what? I didn't really put on any weight. But I developed this almost, I want to say a psychosis.
Yeah.
There wasn't a second in the day
where you didn't think about food.
Where I didn't think about my weight.
The
food was an irritant.
Yeah.
You know? The food was like, oh, God, I've got to eat because otherwise I'm just going to be in pain.
Yeah.
But it was like, I would constantly clutch my stomach. I'd constantly clutch my chest, my arms. I'd just be checking my body, you know? And I think a lot of guys in the gym deal with this, actually.
Yeah.
And I realise in hindsight, the people around me found it so stressful because they just wanted me to stop,
yeah,
doing it. And still now, it's like 3 years later, whenever I get triggered on anything.
Yeah.
So it's like, if I feel, so say for example, when I make music in the studio, I get so insecure. Like it's, yeah, that's like my most vulnerable. So I come out and I'm like, oh my God, I can't sing, I can't rap, I can't do anything.
Yeah.
And then it comes again. Yeah. I start grabbing my stomach. And it's like
your go-to mechanism. Yeah. Yeah.
It's like almost a habit now.
Yeah. Well, I think it happens because like, well, first of all, there's so much silence around male body image, but also because it is wrapped up in masculinity. So if you talk about it, you are less of a man if you talk about it.
Yeah.
But also I think in terms of everything you're talking about in terms of the gym, whether you're a man or a woman, I think the problem is that it's,
yeah,
so...
Yeah, women get it too, big time.
But the problem is because it's so society approved,
right,
that you're almost encouraged, because how many compliments were you getting on
for
a day?
For being obsessed,
yeah,
with, oh my God,
and
yeah,
like, it doesn't matter what your mentality was, doesn't matter how healthy you are in the brain, it mattered what you looked
like
physically. And the thing is, we do this thing in society where we claim it's about health, but actually, it's very much about an aesthetic look,
yeah,
and that if you have to compromise your health, whether it's your mental health or your actual physical health,
your time,
by starving
food,
or for you, if you had hurt your arm and carried on working out through,
yeah,
that, they don't care. Like, it's not about the fact that, like, oh, no, you should rest your arm because that's healthy for you. It's about, no, you have to maintain the aesthetic. Mm-hmm. And we just need to get rid of this idea that health is an appearance, because it's not. You can't tell someone is healthy.
Is that one of your taglines?
Yeah.
I love it. No, I love it. I love
not
that.
Nothing's that natural. Like, yeah. I do the same conversation.
No, but that's dope. That's dope. Yeah. Like, health is, what is it?
Health is not an appearance.
Yeah, and it's not.
No, and also because I think, for me, the fact that I'm both fat and also, and I use the fat as a descriptor and not as an insult because it's the same as the word tall in my mind. The fact that I have had illnesses and then I'm also fat, there are so many people online who are like, but are you healthy? And I'm like, I've literally introduced myself saying I've had 15 surgeries.
Yeah.
But I know when you ask that question, what you're actually implying is my weight.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's just so messed up.
You're not even asking you if you're feeling all right as a result of overcoming a tumor.
Yeah, exactly. And I was like, what exactly is healthy?
Yeah, really,
and what's the definition? And like, everyone online, like the trolls, and I'm sure you get it as well, but everyone would assume that my surgeries are due to my weight, but my weight, they've never once thought about the fact my weight could be a consequence my surgeries.
Exactly.
And the saddest thing is I do a lot of public speaking, and I went to Teenage Cancer Trust and I was talking to them and I was doing it with under 18 year olds, and like kids, like teenagers with cancer, all the questions were, I don't want to take my steroids because they're going to make me gain weight. I don't want to go back to school because half my head is shaved. I don't, like, all the things aesthetic. I worried about, because despite having enough hair, I am half bald behind my head.
Right.
Like, and it was things like that. And I was like, this is the damage and this is the extreme end, but this is also what's actually existing in society of what we're doing every time we have to justify someone's health in order for them to deserve respect, like basic respect in society. And every time you're fat shaming someone and saying, well, you should go die in a hole, or all these things that people say, or like, you're killing yourself, you have no clue what's going on with someone's health.
Yeah.
And like, what if they're actually going through cancer right now? Do you really think their weight should be a priority? Because their body's trying to sort out quite a lot of problems in their body. And if the weight gain is what the body needs in order to heal, then that's the best thing for that body.
Do you think, does that happen?
Well, yes, steroids, and also because...
Of course, from the steroids.
From steroids, but also... For me, with my illnesses, this weight gain never really happened in hospital because I got... I didn't eat for like 6 weeks or 3 months. But if you do that...
You go into your body goes into survival
mode. Starvation mode. Exactly.
I actually know that.
And it's
really difficult to come back off that as well.
And you gain weight when you come back out. So what my main experience was coming out of hospital and everyone going, oh, you just went into hospital, don't you think you should take care of your health? And me going, this is me taking care of my health. This is me eating the exact same amount I was eating beforehand. The only difference is...
Did anyone offer you guidance on what to eat?
No, so this
See,
is...
that's the annoying thing, isn't it?
Yeah, and also no one offered me any sort of emotional support around it. But the labelling around foods, I think, becomes a problem because it gets equated to morality a lot.
Yeah.
So if you eat a good person. If you eat a bad food, you're a bad person. Actually, if we stopped making bad foods so demonised, they wouldn't be... So, like, your body naturally... I truly believe your body naturally craves good nutrition and all... Like, something that fulfills every mineral and... Whatever, that's not my forte.
Your body has a genuine desire to gain a nutritional value.
Yeah, exactly.
But you're saying it becomes intertwined with a sense of maybe even wanting to rebel against an idea of authority.
Yeah, and also the fact that if you...
I understand that.
It's a psychological thing. When someone tells you, like, no, you can't eat the donut,
like,
suddenly you
screw
want to...
You.
Yeah, exactly. I suddenly want... I mean, maybe it's just because I'm a very stubborn person, but like, I'm like, don't tell me what to eat.
And on the topic of influencing, which you are so doing so wonderfully, you've covered so many of these points about there being a link between mental health and body image. I think it's so, so poignant, the point about the context in which someone's eating something really needs to be highlighted. Are there any body positive accounts that you follow?
My entire newsfeed is body positive. So I don't follow accounts that make me feel bad.
Right.
And I will unfollow an account, not necessarily because it's their content, but you know, there are certain body types that for me, it's the fitness body. So I love the gym. I've always loved the gym. And when I was in my most negative headspace, the people I would pin on a board and put on the fridge
as goals
would be the fitness body.
Rippling abs.
Yeah. And so there are days when, of course, you're just especially a few years ago where I'd be like, oh, I want to go back to that. And I used to have a similar body to that. But obviously with every surgery, it kind of changes. So I had to go through a phase where I was just following them, they're a lovely person, I love their content, but just following them makes me feel bad about me. And so I tell people, so one of my best friends is thin, gorgeous, blonde, big boob, big bum, beauty ideal, basically. And I was doing a live the other day and someone came on and we were doing it together and said, oh, I feel really bad because I can't follow her. I love her content, but her body makes me feel really bad and I hate that. Is that a wrong thing to say? And she said herself, she was like, no, don't follow me if my body makes you feel bad. It doesn't matter what I'm saying.
It's not a stress.
But just, you don't need it in your life. And we're especially at the stage where you're looking at your social media more than you're talking to most of your friends. I spend more time on Instagram than texting my friends. Make sure what you're seeing every day is content that's going to uplift you rather than make you feel bad for who you are or feel shame. Think I'm in love with a singer, but I want to get richer.
Life threw me a bag of lemons, no wonder I'm bitter. Back in the day.
Yeah.
The idea of, you look at any statue from the kind of Greek Roman era, and
they were all
full bodied women, that was seen as goddess like, you know,
because it was seen as a sign of wealth,
exactly,
and
think how inverted that is now, because now people would shame
get personal trainers.
You'd because of the connection between, say, food that lacks nutrition, or just food with high sugar content, and things that everyone knows are bad for your body, especially the government, but we won't get into conspiracy about that.
Oh, no, let's get
into
that.
Those are shifted more towards a particular demographic that haven't got as much of an economic revenue.
And this is the pop.
So now, but if you think how mad that is, you'd be super thin back in the day because you couldn't eat.
Yeah.
And now what you can eat, if you haven't got any money, will only make you...
So this is my issue with this whole health conversation is no one wants to address the socioeconomic effect of it. And I mean, you said you didn't want to get into it, I'm going to get into it.
I know, right, because I thought it was a conspiracy, but when you put it that, it's just so straight up.
No, it's not, because, for example...
Yeah, let's get into it. I'm actually down for this.
Well, corn syrup is subsidised by the government. They know it's bad for us, and it's subsidised. Why do you start subsidising fruit and vegetables? Because companies who use that product...
Oh, mate.
I personally believe the best relationship with health, with hunger, is if you equate it to the same as thirst. You know when you sometimes have a glass of water and you're still thirsty for another? You never sit there and go, but I just had one glass of water, why do I need another?
Yeah.
Sometimes you want, you've just eaten lunch and you're still hungry, you should eat again. Your body is so much more intelligent than any app, any calorie tracker. And if, especially when it comes to women and hormonal changes and periods and all of that, you can be really hungry after you've just had lunch and you should listen to your body. The more you listen to your body...
Wait for the digest though. Because I often go in for you know them ones where your eyes are bigger than your stomach.
About 15 minutes.
Yeah, it's 12 minutes and then minutes. And then I'm all right.
But it's this thing
I know what you mean, of course.
But it's this thing of we're teaching people that so this 2,000 calorie thing, you know how it's meant to be 2,500 calories for a man and 2,000 for a woman?
I didn't know.
So that was calculated, first of all, for insurance purposes at first.
Great.
And it was calculated using white men.
Brilliant.
And then they just lowered it for women. They never used women to calculate it. They never used black men, Chinese men, any other race. Yeah. They literally just took a small segment of white men.
All those statistics are like that though, aren't they?
Yeah, but
you can't
trust
any of it.
Then if you think about it, the average person on the street knows their calorie consumption, but I'm but you don't know where that statistic comes from. But it also it goes back to what you were saying in the beginning, where you were saying that when you were going through a body dysmorphic phase, is that how you phrase it? You became, all your thoughts were about your weight. More you think about food, the more you think about your body, the less you actually live your life.
Yeah.
And people think that being body positive means that you walk past the mirror and go, oh my God, I bloody love myself. It's not. It's the fact that, for example, this morning I left the house without any makeup, not really caring what I looked like. I was able to record and like go to meet. I have meetings all day. I don't really care what I look like because I'm there to do my job. I can do my job. Thanks. But I can do my job just as good as I did 2 days ago when I was on a photo shoot.
Of course.
And I'm body positive because I know that's not going to impact my performance. But people think it's the other way around. People think the more body positive you get, the more you think about your body. It's actually the less you think about your body. Like, I don't obsess when I walk past the mirror anymore.
I love that. Very inspiring.
Thanks.
What would you recommend to people to improve their own body image / their own concept of body image?
Okay, so I think you should diversify your news feeds as the like first place to start. Like, make sure you have different body types on your news feed. Be aware of the things that are naturally on social media, but also media, where editing, Facetune, all of these things. Realize what you're seeing is not a realistic representation of a real body, and that. Also, start addressing your own relationship with your body by building this very basic, you don't have to go for love, but just basic respect, appreciation for your body existing and doing its job. You don't have to think you're beautiful. Your beauty really doesn't matter as much as society likes to make you think it does. But your body is there for a purpose. It's doing its job. And just starting from a basic level of respect and appreciation is how I built my confidence. And knowing that I'm way more than my beauty, I'm way more than my appearance. I happen to believe I'm beautiful, but I don't need to believe I'm beautiful in order to live a fulfilled and accomplished life.
That's great. Listen, Michelle, I would love to talk to you again. Thank you so much. You're very inspiring. Big up all the work you're doing with the Be Real campaign. And
there's a lot of free resources on the Be Real website and toolkit and to help you get started on your body confidence journey.
Wicked. Lots of love.
Amazing.
Thanks. Find out more about YMCA and the Be Real campaign at berealcampaign.co.uk. That's berealcampaign.co.uk. On the website, you'll find loads of amazing information and resources. And make sure you join the campaign this Mental Health Awareness Week in the fight against unrealistic beauty standards by signing up to its Body Image Pledge.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Powered by Spirit Studios.